Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks. We're back another week, a little closer to Christmas. You are listening to the Duke Machado Show, and my name is Duke Machado. I've got a great show lined up for tonight. We're talking all about Ben Carson, Dr. Carson. We all know that he's a presidential candidate. A lot of us, me included, didn't really understand who he was until the prayer breakfast, where he showcased his skills in dealing with some of the overreaching that President Obama has been doing with regard to health care and other things in the country. And I can tell you that he is someone that people have been paying attention to, well, cautiously uncertain whether or not he had the ability to become president. Through this campaign, he's shown that he has a lot of composure. He's got a lot of ability that other candidates have not displayed yet. I know he's one of my favorites, but our guest tonight is Donna Jernigan. Let me tell you a little bit about Donna and why she's on tonight. After Ben Carson came to Waco, he did a book signing. After that, I really wanted to know how I could reach out and make contact with people who knew him locally, who were working with him. I saw people passing out bumper stickers. I knew that he already had somewhat of a, not necessarily a team assembled, but that he had supporters in this area. And so through some research and searching on Facebook in the area, the one person that kept popping up was Donna Jernigan. So I didn't know who she was. I wasn't sure whether I'd ever met her, and I wanted to get her on this program because I can tell you, it seems like in this area, there's no one who knows Ben Carson better than her. And her background is unique. She doesn't like to brag about it, but she does have a doctorate, so she is a doctor. She has been in education most of her life. She's got 20-plus years as a military, being raised in the military, half of those years out of this country. And she's been in the Waco area here for 25 years. Donna, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Duke.
Well, I mean, it's true. I could tell that there was already support, some sort of a movement or grassroots support structure in the area. And, you know, you're one of the people who kind of have been leading that, not necessarily leading it, but, you know, you've been a Dr. Carson fan for quite some time. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself? And then kind of how you got to know about Ben Carson.
Well, I spent 12 years as a public school teacher and part of that time as a counselor. And my areas have always involved reading, doing lots of reading and being really involved in history, historic reenactment. I taught history most of the years that I was a teacher. I did some teaching science, but my passion is history. And then I decided for many reasons to become a homeschool mom, and so I homeschooled for over 25 years, my three children. And years ago, when the book Gifted Hands first came out on the life of Ben Carson, I read that. I picked it up probably, as I recall, at a homeschool convention, and I brought it home. At that time, my one child that was about to start homeschooling was really too young to read a book that level. So we read it together as a family traveling, and we just fell in love with Ben Carson. We decided he was going to be one of our heroes forever. So as each of my children got old enough, Well, we always read the book aloud to them among ourselves, and then we required them to read it, and I required my kids to read it at least two times before they left my household, and they all have cherished copies of Gifted Hands. Then the movie came out, and we're always very critical of movies. We think you've got to read the book. The movie is never as good. But other than maybe one or two little Hollywood issues that were thrown into the book that are not true to Dr. Carson, we were really pleased, and we really loved the way Cuba Gooding played the part of Ben Carson. He spent months with Dr. Carson so that he could faithfully emulate the character of Dr. Carson. And so we fell in love even more with Dr. Carson. And then as my kids got a little older and Carson would be within striking distance of Waco, I would take them to listen to him speak. And so over the years, we just developed a really long-distance love affair with this man. We just consider him one of our idols. He is a man of character that you would hold up for your children as someone to aspire to want to have the kind of can-do attitude about everything in life, that there is no problem too big to solve. No is not an option, and that's always been one of my characteristics. No is just not an option. So, time went on, and we had a good friend, homeschool family in the Waco area, whose child had her left hemisphere, that means her left side of her whole brain, was removed by Dr. Carson probably 10 or 12 years ago. And when that family returned from Baltimore after 4 or 5 months, they could not talk enough about how stellar Dr. Carson was, that the movie and the book do nothing compared to being around him in person to understand the depth and the quality of his character. And he would visit them weekly after they were dismissed from his care for the 4 or 5 months that they were in rehab. And they came home saying, there's just no way to depict in a book or a movie how much he really cares for people, for all of his patients. And my firm belief is that he will apply all of those giftings that he has to saving our country, to caring for our country in the same way that he has cared for the, I think I've heard, 15,000 patients' lives that he has saved and forever changed for the better.
Well, a couple of things, just so everyone knows, we are going to get into some specifics. I want to dig into a little bit of his background before we get into the policy positions and things like that. Kind of, you know, we all see the politicians on television. We can see the glimpses of videos, the debates on television, but really that doesn't give you an inside look. I had the pleasure, I'm going to call it a pleasure, some of the other media people may not have seen it that way, but when Dr. Carson came to Waco, he stood and signed books for hours and met thousands of people and shook hands and made eye contact with, smiled at everyone, was graceful, was just an honorable man. You could just see that he didn't tire of it. In fact, when the event was over, all of the employees, they all gathered together and he took his pictures with them, thanked them all. A very humble man. I don't see that. I don't see those sort of traits in some of our other candidates.
Well, I'll just fill in a few blanks for you there. There were over 2,000 people came to that our book signing here in Waco. We collected over 400 signatures of new supporters who want to come on board and be volunteers, which is just phenomenal in just the little tiny Waco area alone. And that was Dr. Carson's third book tour stop on that day. And every day that he was in Texas, he stopped at 3 book tour stops and went on. The day after he was with us, he went on to Wichita Falls and then up to Oklahoma. So every day, I remember back whenever he was doing his One Nation book tour, when we were still trying to recruit him and draft him to become our presidential candidate, someone chosen by the people because of his character. He was doing as many as six stops a day, six speaking tours a day during that time. The man is phenomenal as far as his energy level, but he's just at peace. He just really and truly just moves through life completely at peace, completely calm. I mean, he really is phenomenal and very personable, very caring, looks right into your eyes. There's no pretense, no prevarication. He has no hidden agendas, and he's never been a politician. And that's one thing that really appeals to a lot of us. He's one of us. He came from nothing, made something of himself, used the gifts that God has given him to their fullest potential. And when he had spent his 40 years being the most successful in his career, inventing most of the brain surgery techniques that are used today, he was ready to retire, and he and his wife were ready to travel, and he really wanted to spend his full-time focus on his scholarship project. You know, from the time he graduated from medical school and got his first job and had any money to spend, he started setting aside money and paying for scholarships for students. And that Carson scholarship is just phenomenal in and of itself. But we, the people, got in there after we heard him speak at that prayer breakfast and said, no, 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 no. You cannot retire yet. You must give to your country because you truly are a citizen statesman.
And, you know, that's the thing is that politics is so bitter nowadays. We feel like we've seen nice guys get slapped down in Washington. Nice guys finish last. And when people think of Dr. Carson, they think nice guy. They think that he doesn't have the will to strike first if needed. You hear this a lot. I hear this a lot. And I have told people, like with me, I'm a nice guy too, but don't confuse my kindness for weakness, because that might be a mistake. And I kind of feel like Carson's the same way, but what do you know? What do you know about that?
Well, you know, until a person is actually tested, you don't know what they're made out of. We've had an awful lot of politicians in the past that we thought we had figured out, but once they became our leaders, they totally disappointed us. I do believe that Carson has 40 years of experience making measured responses and split-second responses to the situations that he has faced. He has had to stand for hours, 20 hours, with team after team of support staff having to go on relief while he stood there and still had to make split-second decisions to save the lives of countless children. And as I said, he's going to apply that same kind of focus and split-second decision-making. He has great instincts, great intuition, and it doesn't matter what he applies it to. He's going to be able to make really good, measured responses with the benefit of the best advisors that are out there.
Well, let's talk about the advisors. He was getting slammed, and people said that, or, you know, the news media were saying that he was falling in the polls, dropping because he was coming across as being weak on foreign policy. And maybe, you know, the thing about Dr. Carson that I've seen is that if there's any validity to something like that, he's not going to take offense to it, but he will rectify that situation.
Yeah.
And so what did he do? He went on a trip. He went on a trip and spent some time in the Middle East. Do you know any of the details on that?
Well, probably just what you and I both have access to in the media. And, of course, I am not an expert on Ben Carson. I've never met him personally. We in the 2016 committee that used to be the Draft Ben Carson Committee, Draft Ben Carson for President, we are not allowed by IRS rules to have any direct contact with him. We cannot collaborate with him. We can find out where he's going to be and have our team there and gather supporters and pass out literature and so on. And we can shake his hand and have him sign our books, but we just kind of smile and wink at him and say, we're supporting you and we're one of your volunteers. But as far as his trip, his foreign policy, he visited Syria. He visited the refugee camps, and I'm not sure exactly what you're specifically asking, but, you know, his conclusion was what the vast majority of the rest of us say, and that is the people, the refugees in Syria, need to be kept close to home and then repatriated to their homes when that's possible. And it's so much easier to do that from the Middle East. And he said, you know, rather than uprooting these people entirely and taking them not just far away, but to a completely different and to them hostile culture, so different from theirs, he said, let's spend our money much more wisely and let's keep them close to home and let's collaborate with the other Middle Eastern countries to take them in where they are welcome, where their culture is the same, and then where they can be repatriated much more quickly and more efficiently and certainly more cost-effectively than by uprooting them and bringing them here and then, of course, throwing this country into a panic because we don't know which ones are truly refugees and which ones are have infiltrated that system.
Mm. Well, and, you see, the thing about all this refugee business, and I've had different guests on, there is no way to filter them out or to screen any of the refugees. There's no way to vet them. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense to bring them here. At the same time, we can't turn our back because this is a life and death situation for a lot of people. So I did like his response, and that's the thing about him is he's not just going to say the first thing that comes to his mind. He's going to think of the different scenarios, play them out, and then pick the one that is most that makes the most sense. Now, let me ask you this: he's in the territory of Marco Rubio. I would say Ted Cruz are his biggest competitors at this time. Donald Trump still leads in the polls for the most part. How do you think Carson breaks through all the chatter about Rubio and Cruz and Trump?
I don't even know where to start with that question. There's so many different ways to approach it, but they are different. Certainly Carson and Trump are polar opposites in almost every area that you could talk about. A lot more similarities between him and our two lovely Cuban-American friends. I like to focus on the similarities and know that there are a lot of compatibilities between the three. Maybe one of the biggest differences I see is age and experience. And when I say experience, I really don't believe that a person has to have years and years of political experience to be the president. We've had a lot of political experience, and they've gotten us into a mess on both sides. And it really is time for us to return more to having a citizen statesman, kind of like Washington was. You know, his friends came to him and said, okay, we need you. You've got to be our first president. And he said, I'm not a politician. That is not my job. I was a general. I did my part. Now leave me alone. Let me retire to my farm and run it and spend some time with my wife. And his friends said, no, you have the honor, the character, the integrity, the trust of the American people, and it is this time that you were born for. Those are all the same things that we have said to Dr. Carson, and the reason that we have selected him with passion. His supporters are literally passionate about him, and because we know we've drafted him because of those strong characters, that intellect, and his ability to make those measured decisions, his ability to bring people from all sides together. So these other gentlemen, they are not able to do that. I guess I'll take the liberty to use what I consider to be the best defense for why Carson may be, and I believe is, the only conservative candidate who is capable of being elected. If we can believe what they told us after the last election, the next president must earn, all other things equal, he must earn 18% of the black vote in this country. Forever, since they've been doing these polls, the black vote has only gone 1% to the conservative side. You can drum up as much support as you want when you are a nice, traditional, conservative Republican, but you are not going to reach out and drum up much more than 1%. And I'll tell you the good test case of that. Back during the last senatorial election, the Carson, Draft Carson group, which is now the 2016 committee, put up $350,000 in North Carolina to pay for ads for Tillis, a nice, strong, conservative, white candidate in North Carolina, going up against Kay Hagan. They split the state up and identified three-quarters of the state, which was, they identified the heaviest populated black areas of North Carolina. They took three-quarters of that and spent the $350,000 on very nicely done ads that revealed Kay Hagan's true nature and why, at the end of each advertisement, Ben Carson said, "I am Ben Carson and I approve of this message." And in the areas of the state where they ran these ads, Tillis got between 12 and 18% of the black vote. In the one quarter of the state that was heavily black populated, they did not run those ads, and that section gave 1% of the black vote to Tillis. If you extrapolate that to the presidential campaign, Carson's not Tillis. He is black, and he is revered in the black community. And the black community, as a matter of fact, the Democrat community at large, are so disgruntled right now. I have seen it all over this country. I've spoken to groups. I don't pass a person by without saying, "Hi, let me give you a brochure about Dr. Carson," and then we'll stop and talk in most cases. And there is a disgruntlement under the surface that's just simmering. But that population cannot say the R word, but they can say the Carson word. And the estimates are that if he gets the nomination, he will get 54% of the black vote, not just 18, which is all that's required.
Yeah, so it could be a landslide victory is what you're saying, if he can get the nomination.
If he gets the nomination,
Those are great insights on the numbers. I just want to let our callers know, I know we've got a few callers on the line, I am going to get to you. And Donna, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to pick up a caller and see what we can see what kind of trouble we can get into here.
Sure.
Here's our quick break.
One disease. Millions of lives permanently disrupted. Today, there are over 5 million Americans living with Alzheimer's disease. But Alzheimer's is taking more than memories. It's taking lives. What few realize is that Alzheimer's kills more people than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined. And Alzheimer's is the only disease in the top 10 causes of death that can't be slowed, stopped, or prevented. From 2000 to 2013, while deaths from other diseases decreased significantly, Alzheimer's deaths increased 71%. But equally disturbing, many living with Alzheimer's say they are not being told their diagnosis. While more than 90% of people with the most common types of cancer say they are told their diagnosis, only 45% of people with Alzheimer's or their caregivers say they are told. The economic toll is staggering, too. In 2015, it will cost the nation $226 billion to care for people with Alzheimer's. By 2030, 72 million baby boomers will reach an age of greater risk. The fact is, everyone's at risk for Alzheimer's, even you. But everyone can help, especially you. We're the Alzheimer's Association, the brains behind saving yours. Join us.
And I play that commercial spot because my mother-in-law has Alzheimer's. She's in the later stages, and it's just a horrible disease. There's no cure for it, and, you know, the entire family truly does go through it with the person who has it, and it's just we have to find a solution. I'm going to be behind promoting this cause and hopefully make some change in some small way. But we're back with Donna Jernigan. Donna is, we're going to call, you're my Ben Carson hookup. You've got all the insight on Dr. Carson. So we left off. We're going to try to take a caller. I tried to get the caller on during the break. Let's see if we can get them on now. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from? I think we're still having technical difficulties there. It might just be you and me still. Or maybe they just want to listen. It's okay. Not everyone wants to talk. It's okay. You don't have to talk. there's plenty of us and plenty to talk about. I know we're about halfway through the show already. It goes by really fast. But let's get into some other issues and Dr. Carson's viewpoints on them. Immigration, you know, I did a chart. I compared the presidential candidates' positions on immigration, and, you know, everyone wants a secure border. They're all the same there. But then what to do with all the illegal immigrants is, you know, that's a different conversation, and people don't agree there. The presidential candidates are all over the board, and some of them, like Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, for example, they just want to deport everyone. They want mass deportation, that sort of thing. Others think that there is a way that we can basically filter out the bad and keep the good. From what I've seen, Dr. Carson's plan, he's not a mass deportation kind of a guy.
Well, no, I think that he looks at it as a very impractical thing to be able to round that many people up and just completely deport them. But on the other hand, he does not believe that you reward people who don't follow the law. So something has to be done as far as having accountability and bringing those people into the economy I'm trying to find the right word, but equitable way, so that they are not taking advantage of the system without giving in to the system. And again, like you said, this is a really touchy issue, and there's I don't think the majority of the supporters of any of the candidates agree with their candidate on this issue. It really is a touchy issue nationwide, across the board, across parties.
You know, I've spoken to some illegal immigrants, or maybe they prefer to be called undocumented residents, whichever. They're not here legally, and they all seem to be okay with paying a fine. They're all okay with, $3,000 to maybe even $4,000 fines per individual. They're okay with the biometric process and paying for all those. They're okay with paying back taxes. They're okay with verifying residence, employment, et cetera, coming out of the shadows, so to speak. And I kind of feel like I'm okay. If they come out, identify themselves, pay the fines, get in the back of the line, and do not get citizenship, I'm okay with that. I think that's part of a rational approach. We have to filter out the bad from the good. I don't know how many candidates are going to come out and say something like that, but in the primary, it's hard to say. Everyone's tries to stay so far to the right for fear of losing votes, and I think that's the strategy Trump has used. But ultimately, even the rhetoric is falling short. People just are not believing it anymore.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a couple of key things, and a lot of what you said is very close to what my perception of Carson's stand is. But the primary thing that I think we all agree on, and that is that the border has to be closed in a meaningful way. It just has to be closed, and that can be done. That's been demonstrated in European countries right now that are building walls to keep these Syrian refugees from flooding into their countries. And they can put these walls up pretty fast. We have the technology to be able to do that. And it just goes without saying, in the same way that we had the amnesty, the Reagan amnesty in the 80s, and the border was not closed in a meaningful way, so here we are right back again saying, let's do amnesty. And yet, if we don't close the border and control our border, we don't have a country. That is the definition of a country. If we cannot control our borders, north and south, then we don't have, we won't have a country for much longer. And then, of course, another thing that you alluded to, and that is pick out the good from the bad. Well, I don't know exactly what you mean by that, but we have to find the lawbreakers, and we have to send them back immediately, and we have to block them from being able to come back again. And especially when they commit crimes pretty much of any kind in this country, because little crimes lead to bigger crimes. That's the typical path for people who are lawless. And in the first place, they've come into this country in a lawless status. And so if they begin breaking the laws and harming Americans, then we have to get them out of this country. And then there will be a greater sense of trust in our government, and a greater sense of safety will be restored to the people who live in this country, who've earned the right by birth and by their heritage as Americans, regardless of how long that's been here. They've come here legally, or they were born here legally, and they have the right to feel safe in their own country. Back of the line, that's the part that I think we all have a hard time with. You allow them to stay in this country, but they go to the back of the line. Yeah, well, we agree with that, but then do we continue to allow immigrants to come at the same rate that they're coming? There's a lot of talk with people saying, then we've got to slow it down until we have equity again with the numbers that are coming. It gets really complicated. And you're right. Nobody wants to touch it. Everybody wants to talk really big and say the things that the American public wants to hear. But can you trust that what they're going to do afterward? I don't think so. I don't, because it's not practical. Whereas Carson, again, as we've talked about before, he has a measured response to everything. He very seriously considers all of the different options, and then he says, okay, this is where we balance truth with mercy, one of the biblical concepts. And I don't know that he has said those words. I just know that he lives by those biblical and traditionally American principles that go back to our founding and have been consistently with us until maybe 30 or 40 years ago. And what the balancing together truth and mercy is taking that humanitarian spirit that we have, but that sense of justice and doing what's right and waiting in line, waiting your turn, following the law. It's not the fault of these immigrants who are here now that they are in this untenable situation. It's the lack of leadership for many, many decades. Not applying consistently the laws that we have, not closing the border. So what do we do now? We cannot, at least according to most of the candidates, including Dr. Carson, we cannot just round up millions. It's not just 11 million. It's a lot more than 11 million illegal residents and ship them out. But one of the, I'm talking out of school. I'm not speaking for Dr. Carson. This is my opinion, but I believe that it's a practical solution. When you cut off the economic incentives to come to this country, then people will self-deport themselves. And I'm not saying you can't hire any of them. I'm just saying we have a lot of people in this country who are out of work, and those jobs are being given to not just people from south of the border, but the workers that are coming in on work visas. There are reports all over this country, including Disney World right now, where the management has called their people into the office hundreds at a time. I think it's something like 300 or maybe even 400 workers in Disney right now in their technical fields have been called in and said, you are being fired, but before you go, you are going to have to train your replacements. And then we're going to pay them a lot less. And they're all from foreign countries like India and the Middle East. We cannot continue doing that. We cannot. That is, I guess I can't call it illegal activity, but it's
un-American.
Unethical.
It's un-American.
Un-American. It's not okay to do that. So you can't just go out and solve the immigration problem by just taking care of the people that are flooding in from south of the border. We have a systemic problem in this country, and it basically is a lawless attitude on the part of the people who are supposed to be enforcing our laws and leading us. And so immigration, oh my gosh, we could talk about that for a long time. But
well, the way I see it, I want to drop the hammer, too. Sometimes I'll get in a conversation with people, and they'll just assume, because I'm always talking about immigration, that I'm an amnesty guy. But I'm not an amnesty guy. I'm a solutions guy.
Yeah.
And so I say we have to give every good person, and you know, there are a lot of good people who are here living in an undocumented status. And if we can allow them to filter themselves out, screen themselves by entering this program, and we set a deadline to have this done, and after the deadline, whoever hasn't come out of the shadows, as far as I'm concerned, we could employ every effort to get these people located and, you know, deported. I don't have a problem deporting those people. And then we could launch an all-out effort to do that, and I think we could get people behind. I've even asked illegal immigrants this question, if they would be upset if after the time limit that they were rounded up and deported. You know, the ones who didn't come out. And they say, no, if you give them a chance and they don't come out, there's a reason they don't come out, and you don't want them anyway.
Right.
So, There's some common sense solutions out here. What I don't like is when people say, well, we don't have a choice. The only way we can do this, like Donald Trump says, the only way we can deal with this problem on refugees is to ban every Muslim from entering this country. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
No, there's another alternative. It just takes someone else to think about it. You know, that alternative is let's support them in their countries, like what Dr.
Yeah.
Carson is saying. But, you know, you don't hear that. It doesn't sound, it's not so much red meat. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. It's almost like there needs to be a transitioning person for Dr. Carson. You know, he can say something that is rational and even sounding, and then someone needs to take what he says, jazz it up and spice it up, and then pass that message on. Or I don't know, but he definitely needs to. He definitely needs to be aware that people look, and I'm sure he is aware of it. But you know, people, the biggest thing that I hear when they talk about Carson is that he looks tired, that he looks passive, that he doesn't have that aggressive leadership traits. I don't know what they're looking for, but apparently it's pretty obvious among primary voters, because that's what everybody refers back to. And I don't know that we can fix it. I would hate to miss someone like Ben Carson because the American people misinterpreted his personality, you know.
Well, a lot of the interpretation is being given to us by the press. As always, they decide for us what we are supposed to think about people. They carry those stories. They play those sound bites over and over and over again. And sure, Carson is, what's a good word for it? He's calm. He's measured. He's level-headed. He stops and he thinks for a few seconds before he answers the first thing that pops out of his into his mind. And for some people, that seems, you use the word tired. He has learned to pace himself. When you have to stand for 20 hours at a time doing an intricate little surgery, you learn to pace yourself. And I said before, he will apply that same kind of measured brilliance, measured decision-making to anything that faces him. We're not going to have to worry about him jumping right into the middle of a war and poking our allies or enemies in the eye and defending them. He's just not like that. He's a conciliator. He's one who brings people together, brings different factions together. He understands the end goal, and it's not putting a D or an R into the White House. It's pulling this country back together and helping us be prepared for what I think is inevitably the coming American economic disaster. If we continue on the path that we are continuing right now, we are going to collapse in our economy. We need someone like Carson who can bring everyone together and come up with solutions that work, not solutions that will get us reelected.
Well, I've noticed his new commercial. His new commercial is "These Hands," and you know, I love that. It kind of like igniting the fire within the individual and using the strength of the individual to heal the country. It's kind of how I took that commercial spot.
Yes. Yeah. Well.
Tell me this. When it comes to dealing with these foreign leaders, we're talking about, you know, Putin, these G8 summit type leaders from around the world. Netanyahu, you've got Saudi Arabia, you've got all these power players. They all want to attach their hooks into Americans. We're already in debt. The scope of our problems is unimaginable. It's unfathomable how bad it is. What kind of team do you think he's going to put together? How do you think he's going to attack this this economic nightmare? Like you said, it's an upcoming disaster if we don't do something. How do you think he looks at this?
Again, I cannot speak for Dr. Carson.
I know, but.
And a lot of what I say is just my instinct of what I believe he believes and what I believe he's going to do. That's why I support him so passionately. But I know that he believes that you have to have a leader who leads from ahead and not from behind. You have to be informed, truly informed, of all the factions, everything that's going on. I think that he is, I truly believe that he's devoted to putting America at the center again, where our interests in our country are considered. I would love to believe that he is going to stop paying money to people who are turning around and using that money to attack us. We have to stop aid to those people. I know that he is behind Israel. He believes that that's vital for us to support Israel. And we mentioned earlier that the Syrians need to be taken care of in their own country. And the factions that are, oh my goodness, I'm going to get in trouble here because I can't think of all of their names, but the Kurds and the Peshmerga, all of those people who are fighting so valiantly for their homeland, we have to start supporting them militarily. I know that Carson believes in that. It's almost a quote, an exact quote from Carson. He says, "We have to stop waiting around to see what other people are going to do. America must take a stronger leadership role in our country, and that the world needs America to step back up in its place as a world leader and not, as he suggests, just standing around waiting to see what everybody else is going to do before we make our decisions. I know that he believes we have to fight ISIS where they are before they get to this country, because they are coming. The foreshocks, the tremors, the little tremors of that coming earthquake are already here. We've seen it in the news over the last few weeks in Paris and in our own country. We have to fight them where they are in all seriousness and not whatever it is that we're doing. I remember a couple of weeks ago there was a report that said that we were doing something like 8 bombing runs a day against ISIS, and they told how many bombing runs were done. It was like thousands a day during the Gulf War, the original Gulf War back in the 90s, and we won that war quick.
Yeah, this president doesn't have the desire to battle over there anymore. He's an appeaser. I believe that his intention was to reduce our capacity to protect ourselves, to defend ourselves, and he's been successful. Like he wanted to fundamentally transform. He's done it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Hopefully,
someone like Dr. Carson gets in office, and who's rational. I don't want a candidate who's just going to, you know, like to me, and I can say this, just Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, these guys are calculated as far as political. They make political calculations. How does it benefit them? Yet, how can they lean on the Constitution and yet at the same time make a statement that is contradictory to the principles of the country? You know, they're going to say they're opportunists. That's the word I'm looking for. They're opportunists. Carson doesn't strike me as an opportunist. That's why I like him. I've been leaning real heavily on Marco Rubio. I like a lot of what Rubio stands for. But more and more, I asked Ben Carson how I would be able to tell the difference of who to vote for between him and Rubio. And you know what he told me? He said, time will tell. This is a long race. You're going to see us with several debates. You'll be able to make your mind up. You're going to know. You're going to know.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's true wisdom. He didn't say you need to vote for me because I'm here right now. He didn't say you need to vote for Rubio because he's Hispanic and I can tell because you're Hispanic you want to support a Hispanic. He just kind of went along and said it's going to hit you. Your heart is going to tell you, and I think that's what happens. You know, people who I saw who wanted to get their book signed, they loved Ben Carson. They could not believe they were actually seeing him in person. They just loved him. And I've seen how they act with other elected officials. And, you know, they call them a rock star status candidates and things like that. And, you know, you can tell they get into the pictures, they get into the glory, they get into all these things, but no, Dr. Carson, just cool as can be, and I like him more and more.
Well, I do want to make one real quick comment to finish off what we were talking about, and then I'll talk about what you just opened up. My dad fought in the Vietnam War, and as part of his 20 years that he spent in the military. And my father-in-law, who spent 30 years, also spent his time in Southeast Asia, getting close to the very end. But it was a travesty that we walked away from that country, that we did not win, and we could have. It was like they played a game. And again, we have the same mm-hmm. version of that going on in the Middle East, where it's just like a game. It's like a board game, and we support one group one day, we support another the next day, and then Russia enters, and now we're on the Russian side, but no, now we're not on the Russian side, and is this going to mean we're going to get into a war with Russia? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that we're not having leadership that will take us through this in a clear way, and that's what I think Carson is going to bring to the table on that. Now, as far as Carson's supporters, I've been doing this a year and a half. I've been the designated Texas director for the 2016 committee. Even though I live right here in Waco, Texas, I just believe that I was at the right place at the right time, saw a poster of Carson's face, and I thought, oh my gosh, does that mean that he is running for president? I literally ran to that table. And when they said, yes, well, we're trying to draft him, and I said, I'm here. I am all in. I cannot tell you the level of passion that all of Carson's volunteers have. We have right around 4,000 active, regular volunteers here in Texas alone. And here are the commonalities that I've seen in just about all of them. They say to me, I have never done anything like this in my life. I've always voted. I may have even gone to my precinct meeting, but I have never given my money, and I have never given my time, even for a phone bank, even for passing out brochures in my neighborhood. But the majority, I'm going to say 90% or more of the volunteers have never done anything like this. They have finally seen that we're in such troubled times that they have to get up off their couch and do something. And the reason they're able to do that is because they are so inspired by this man of honesty, integrity. We can trust him. And it doesn't matter who we are, where we come from, what party affiliation we are. We know we can trust him. And we have to stop paying attention to what the press and even the polls say about him. He is a man that was born for such a time as this. The other thing that his supporters have in common is that they're passionate. They just exhibit such a high level of passion. And it's not a rock star adoration kind of thing. It is, I think we all feel privileged to be a part of his campaign.
Mm-hmm.
It's an honor. I spend between 10 and 16 hours a day consistently, pretty much 7 days a week. I take a break on Sundays and I go to church, but otherwise I am volunteering for Dr. Carson all the time. It's what I do. It's what I live and breathe, and until I get my walking papers, until we know that it's all over, but it's not all over. When I have a few people who will say, well, what are you going to do? The polls are showing that he's tanking. And it's like, no, he's not tanking. And you look at any given day, you can look at polls. And it's been that way since the beginning. Even when he was polling really high, he might be high in one poll and low in another poll. It's up and down. Quite frankly, I think it's whatever the people, the pollsters, want it to be. It's what the news media wants to be able to manipulate it to say. And so we have to stop paying attention to the polls and pay attention to the character of the man, get behind him, send out letters to all your people that are on your Christmas card list and tell them you need to vote for Dr. Carson, you need to get involved, you need to go to your precinct meeting. As a matter of fact, if there are people listening right now who are interested, we're having a debate watch party at Trujillo's restaurant tomorrow evening to watch the debate together. Come and meet me. Get signed up to be a local volunteer or supporter for Dr. Carson. Host watch parties, get on his website, become a supporter, leave a message with Duke, and your information will get to me. I'll show you how, in your situation, whatever you think your limitations are, how you can still be a powerful influence in your world, your sphere of influence for Dr. Carson. He really was called for such a time as this, and all of us are part of his army. We need to get in there, support him, carry it through to the finish, because in the same way that Washington said, oh, come on, give me a break, let me go home and work my farm, and his friends would not leave him alone, we didn't leave Dr. Carson alone. We drafted him. He said no right up until May. Well, actually, he said yes well before this past May. It was his wife that was the holdup. She said, just like all the rest of us have thought, do you know what they're going to do to us? Do you have any idea? And he said, well, yes, but the American people need me. They've shown me by collecting nearly 1 million signatures. They need me. And she said, no, 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 no. Honest to goodness, all of us who had worked at that point for a year or more were like, are you kidding me? His wife is going to rule the roost and say no? Well, yes, because he believed with his whole heart that he had to have She's his biggest ally. She has always been his biggest supporter, his right-hand woman. And until she said yes, he was not going to agree to become a candidate. And you know what made the difference? It's the same thing that makes the difference for probably a huge number of people who are listening right now. What people kept whispering in her ear at every book tour stop that they made for his One Nation book was, you have to do this because you have grandchildren. What kind of world are you leaving to your children and your grandchildren? And that finally convicted her. And you'll hear her still say, we're doing this for our grandchildren and for your grandchildren across this whole country. And that's what all of us have to get involved. If you don't support Carson, fine. Get up. It's time to do something. Get behind a candidate. I'm convinced that it's Dr. Carson. But we can no longer sit at home. We can no longer just vote. We have to do more to take this country back because we're losing it.
Well, that's a lot of people say it's already lost, but I know it's not officially lost. I know we're really close to losing it. It is going to take someone who can pull things together. We sure cannot have bombastic, one-sided leadership. This has to work for everybody. We have to have a buy-in all the way around. Just a few more seconds, Don. I'll give you the last word.
Okay. I think I would like to quote my favorite retired general. His name is General Robert F. Dees. A lot of you have heard of him. He's been a Carson supporter since the beginning, retired U.S. Army Major General, and he says, "I think Carson has all of the right reflexes and an amazing intellect to craft common sense solutions out of complex situations. As a military leader, I would be privileged to call him my commander-in-chief. He has the right stuff."
Well, awesome. Thank you for tuning in. This is the Duke Machado Show, and we are out of here. Thank you for calling in, Donna.
Thank you so much for having me.